We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
On today's episode, I actually joined the Indie Cornrows podcast, and Mark Schindler was nice enough to allow me to share a snippet of our conversation about tonight's game versus the Pacers. I get to share my thoughts on the Hornets, and he answers some of my questions on the Indiana Pacer team, who the Hornets are facing off tonight. That, plus some sound bites from Gordon Hayward, up next.
Blue Wire.
With the third pick in the 2020 NBA Draft, the Charlotte Hornets select LaMelo Ball from Chino Hills, California.
TJ. Oh!
All right, guys, welcome into another Buzz Beat. I know that last night's game against the Nets was definitely not a promising one on national television on TNT. And I know that a lot of Hornets fans were frustrated with Chris Webber and Marv Albert calling James Borrego Jim. But just as annoying was the Hornets' performance from the get-go. It wasn't close, and they were always in catch-up mode. Jeff Green went off, had open three after open three, and the Nets did this all without Kevin Durant and James Harden, who got injured in the previous game against the Rockets. And the Nets made a comeback against the Rockets in the previous game, and they did not want to have another slow start, and they took it out on the Hornets. Hornets did not come out with any kind of energy. The offense was very stagnant early on, not getting into the paint. It was just tough going. When you're not making shots early on, it puts you in a hole. And when you're not defending, it also puts you in a hole. But Nets came out with a lot of energy, and give them credit. Kyrie Irving obviously played very well. And there's still a team that up and down the roster has firepower in the offensive side. Bruce Brown, I think, is a very underrated player on this team. So even without those two players that were not suited up tonight, and Blake Griffin wasn't suited up tonight, this team is in first place, like I said, 34 wins, 15 losses for a reason. So on today's episode, I'm going to bring you guys a little bit of everything. I'm first going to highlight a couple of questions that were asked to Gordon Hayward in a media availability the other day. And then to wrap up the episode, there's a conversation between Mark Schindler and I of the Indie Cornrow podcast as we preview tonight's game. And I think the Hornets would love to get a victory tonight and erase that bad taste out of their mouth. So let's jump into this. I do want to share some clips from Gordon Hayward in his media availability the other day. The first question he's responding to is about what's impressed him the most about the Hornets' play, considering they haven't been able to play with LaMelo Ball.
Yeah, I mean, I think, we're playing hard. I think we're competing for sure when we're out there on the court. I think we're executing our game plans. I think that's the most important thing, is trying to execute, you know, what the coaches want us to do. Certainly we miss LaMelo. He's a huge part of what we do, and will continue to be a huge part of what we do when we get him back. But, we got to go out there and just, like I said, try to execute the game plans and play hard.
And the last question we will get to is Gordon Hayward responding to a question about some of the younger players obviously not having playoff experience and how they get caught up to speed, and how he, as a leader who has experienced playoff basketball before, is there a way that he can prepare the kids, prepare the young guys for that experience, as the Hornets, as of now, are in a good position to make the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, I think teaching habits, you know, as far as when we're in practice, thinking about the little things, thinking about watching film, going over the clips that you had. I mean, all these things, you know, these are all things that you can really, really utilize to your advantage when you get into the playoffs, because you're playing a 7-game series, and all those little details matter even more, because the other team's scouting you. They know what you want to do. They're trying to take it away. So you really have to be hyper-focused on the details. And so kind of just talking to players about that, showing through example too about being a professional with that stuff, is all really important. Other than that, like I said, I mean, some of it's, you kind of just got to experience it. And, but I think communicating with the players, talking with the guys about different things that I see, is definitely helpful.
It's Richie again, this time to talk to you about hosting your own podcast with our distributor, Blue Wire Pods. And there's no better place to host than Blue Wire Hustle. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and you just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive a personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, in an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So if you're ready to do more than just listening to us talk about your favorite team, then make your voice heard and Hustle. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box in this episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, lastly, let's get into the conversation, and we're just going to pick it up midstream here as Mark is asking about Malik Monk.
Somebody who has really been impressive this year, though, kind of finally, after you're waiting for it. I know a lot of stuff has been around him that has taken time for him to get to this point, but Malik Monk has just been awesome after, like, not even being in the rotation to start the year. He's been fantastic coming off the bench over, like, the last month or so. I mean, I went from at the beginning of the year, I wasn't sure if they were going to even keep Malik Monk this year or try and re-sign him at the end of the year. I don't remember what his contract situation is at the end of the year, but regardless, I mean, my thoughts on Malik have completely changed now that he's kind of found some consistency.
Yeah, I think the Hornets had an opportunity to extend him this previous offseason, but that's obviously passed. So he will be a free agent this upcoming season, or this upcoming offseason, I should say. Yeah, I've always been a fan of Malik Monk. I think that Borrego might have had a short leash on him, and it seems like he's always had a short leash since he's been in the NBA. It's one of those things where it's hard to kind of gain that confidence if you make a turnover and you get pulled immediately. But when he does play consistent minutes, you can see the type of player that he is. And especially with LaMelo Ball out of the lineup, you're going to need more players like Devontae Graham and Malik Monk to be your playmakers. And I always say this when I go on opposing teams pod, but I think most people view Monk coming out of Kentucky as this shooter, which he was. But I think a lot of people overlook the fact that he can actually play make and play out of the pick and roll. He has really good vision, passing, and all that type of stuff that you would see out of a point guard. The biggest thing with Monk has always been his ability to attack and be aggressive at the rim. And he finishes very, very well around the rim within 4 feet. It's always been a strength of his. And it's not easy, some of the finishes that he has as well, that they've been acrobatic finishes. And he just somehow calmly always makes these shots. It's impressive, to say the least, with the way that he is built at times. And I guess the biggest revelation this season has been his three-point shot. He has shot the ball very, very well from behind the arc. It's probably his best three-point shooting season yet. And I think you would have to let it see how it plays out for a couple more seasons to see if, you know, if this is a thing to stay, because it has been a very up and down kind of career for him from behind the arc. But with LaMelo out, I've really enjoyed watching Monk. I hope that he gets more consistent minutes, and he's definitely in the top 8 or 9 in this rotation. So when things do shrink in the postseason, I would hope, even if LaMelo is back, that Monk is in there as well. But I've definitely been impressed with him. I just don't know if he'll be back with this Hornets team next year, because that's going to be a decision that the Hornets have to make between him and Devontae, I would think.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And I think one thing that I would ask off that as well, or I guess not off that, I mean, because I've felt similar. Like I was kind of surprised a little bit that Devontae didn't get traded. It's been awesome now with how things have worked out. But looking at Terry Rozier, it's kind of funny to me, because I think a lot of people that I know brought up the idea of like, oh, well, they should totally be trying to trade Terry, sell high on him. And I just, every time that I watch Charlotte play, like, I know Terry is not the guy who is a driving force of an offense. He's not going to be like the number one guy on a championship team or anything like that. But in terms of like, I mean, he's the number one outlet on the team, and it shows so often. Like you talked about with him being clutch earlier, like I think seeing him grow as a player, and more importantly, just be put in a good context considering what he was doing in Boston compared to now. Like, I mean, where are you at with whether or not Terry is like a long-term part of the future, or not even long-term, but like next year and the year going on? Because I think it's just like, I'm sure somebody could replace that role in time, but like overall, like what he's done has been immense for them. At least by my eyes, no, I thought he has been.
You're right. You're right. I think when he initially signed the contract, a lot of people were just like, okay, that's just too much money. You know, getting paid $18 million a year. It's just too much. There were some people that said, well, maybe he can play himself into that contract and he can be a tradable asset down the road. And now that he's playing so well, you're like, well, now we don't want to trade him. We want to keep him for the next 2 years. So he signed on this year and next year for about $18 million. So $18 million is kind of a hard, I guess. I mean, it's up there in terms of being a contract that's hard to trade. But I think that he probably has one of, if not the most value on this team when it comes to a trade value. I just don't know if the Hornets at this point in time would want to trade him in the offseason for whatever reason. And I am perfectly okay with having the Hornets keep him next season. And if it expires, it expires, and they're not able to bring him back as an unrestricted free agent in 22-23, that's fine. I think what he's providing for this team, like you said, has been so big in terms of making clutch shots, timely shots. And he's made improvements every single year. So it'll be interesting to see what type of improvements he makes next offseason heading into 21-22. So I think the Hornets view highly of him. The front office does. I don't think he is on their radar in terms of making him a trade chip. But it's funny how people's views have changed on Terry Rozier, because initially it was all about bad contract, player that has not performed up to that type of number. And now they're like, oh, wow, this is somebody that's a important force for this Hornets team. I do have a question for you about your Pacer team, and it's something that I've debated before. Who do you think is more impactful for the Pacers? Is it Sabonis or is it Malcolm Brogdon?
Ooh, yeah, that's a good question. So in terms of overall impact, this is something I've gone back and forth on, because I actually want to say, I'm pretty sure Div asked me this one time. I did a podcast with Div. I want to say most frequent guest on BuzzBeat. I can't remember. I know he's up there, but I think it's Malcolm, just because, like, number one, he's guarding the best player on the other team most nights. I think that's something that gets undersold a lot. His defense has been a lot better this year. Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, he's driving the most offense. He's taking the toughest shots. He's doing a lot of stuff off the dribble. And it's changed up a little bit since Karis has been back. Like, he's getting the ball a little bit less. But I just think overall, as important as Domas is to the team and the way it's structured and what they do, I think if you don't have Malcolm out there, you don't have your main driving force on the offense and your best three-point shooter, your best, I mean, I guess Doug is, but like Malcolm is the only guy who can get close to getting his own shot right now. Considering Karis just isn't quite at that. He's not really back to that level yet. And Domas, that's been my biggest sticking point with him. Like, not that I think he's bad or anything. He's fantastic. He's a two-time All-Star and deserving. But, like, he's not somebody who I think can reliably create his own shot yet. Like, he can do a lot of really nice things to get his own shot, but it's not consistent yet. And Malcolm can do it. So I think overall, I would say Malcolm.
That's interesting, because I've always thought that way, but I didn't know, with me not having watched enough Pacers, I can't act like I've watched enough Pacer basketball to say that, but he's having a great season. And my opinion of Sabonis is that he's also a great player, you know, good footwork, good up and unders in the post. He can handle the ball, obviously, but to your point, maybe he can't create his shot enough, and Brogdon gets overlooked on the defensive side of the court, to where, you know, that is something that is valued a little bit more, especially out on the perimeter. But yeah, he does a lot of the little things well. I almost wish Brogdon took more shots from behind the arc, because I looked up some of the statistics. He just doesn't take enough, I would think, but he does shoot the ball well from out there.
Yeah, so that's something I'm really hopeful for, because one of my favorite nuances that's kind of taken place since Karis is back, I think before Karis came back, so before the All-Star break, Malcolm had taken like 20 corner threes in whatever that was, like 33, 35 games. And now since then, he's taken, I think after last night, I think he's up 14 or 15. So in like a third of the games, and just given how good of a shooter he is, and the corner's an easier 3-point shot, like that's awesome for him. He's getting a lot more looks off ball. His assist numbers are down because he's handling the ball less. So that makes sense. But like, I agree. Like, I want to see him take like 10 threes a game. Like, I think that'd be great for him. Part of the issue is like, he hasn't been as comfortable off the dribble lately, like he was, to start the year. And he's been better since getting the time off with the All-Star break. Cause that's been part of the issue this year. Like, he just has gassed out at times, because of how much he's asked to do. I think the next step for him is really getting more of that off the dribble game working, or just getting more open looks. Maybe getting to do a lot more running off ball, and not having to do everything with the ball in his hands. And I'm hoping that as Karis's game comes back a little bit more, that'll be something that happens more frequently. But I agree. I mean, in Milwaukee, he was one of the probably 10 or 15 best off ball players in the NBA, like somewhere up in there. So I'd love to see him get more looks like that.
Is it one of those things where you think he doesn't have the athleticism to kind of create for himself? Like, so you would want to put him off ball so that he can have that space?
Yeah. So it's interesting, because he's like the definition of a guy who's a combo guard. Like, he's so stuck between being a one and a two that it like hurts me a little bit. Like, I think he really is a two at heart. But he's so good as a driver, like just incredible at collapsing the defense, but he can't finish at the rim for shit. Right. That's just to be completely fair to him. Like, it's not like terrible, but I mean, 52% at the rim is not like, it's at the point where defenses are like, okay, you know, come at us. And it's a lot better with Karis back. I mean, he shot like above 60% at the rim because he's getting a lot more looks off second side actions and not having to drive right into the teeth of the defense. So I think if he were able to finish like even 58%, something that's like not, you know, bottom 10% in the league at the rim, I would feel a little bit differently about it. But just in terms of like, he's not going to be able to draw fouls that way. He's not really a vertical athlete. Like he will, he's had a couple of like just random out of nowhere dunks. Like he had this one against Denver last year. It doesn't even look like he's jumping because he like comes so low off the ground, but like he just doesn't quite have that leap in vertical ability. And it's kind of funny because I've realized like you pick up on some of those things the more you watch the game. Like that's what makes guys who are really good rim finishers. Like it's hard to be a good rim finisher if you don't get off the ground. Like,
right.
And I probably sounded way too critical of Brogdon there at the mentioning his rim finishing, but it's just like, it's so painful to watch sometimes because he does a great job getting there, but it won't even be necessarily the contest. It's just, he doesn't have the angle to finish it. So I think ultimately I think he just ends up being a really efficient, secondary creator is like the goal for him, but kind of like a quasi, like he can do stuff running bench units or, but I think ultimately it's going to be more Karis running things.
Yeah. Well, speaking of rim finishing, I was surprised to see this, but Doug McDermott can finish at the rim. I didn't know that was a part of his game. He's someone that is viewed around the league as someone that shoots the ball so well, and that's what he's known for, but he also finishes the ball around the hoop as well at a good rate. And there is volume as well. So it's not like he's just taking, you know, one shot a game at the hoop. He's definitely getting there. And I think that combination could give the Hornets fits in this game. And I feel like he's played well against Charlotte this season. So what have been your overall thoughts on Doug McDermott? I mean, not just the rim finishing, but just overall as a player.
Yeah. All in all, it's interesting because he was having a really down year shooting from three, but since the All-Star break, he's kind of back up. I mean, he was shooting like 35% from three, 36% from three for like the first 25, 30 games. And he's really found his rhythm again. Like he's just making the shots that we're missing a lot. And that rim finishing, like you're mentioning, is what's so different for him. He used to do a lot of stuff in between, and he was never like a bad mid-range shooter or anything. But now he's just at the point where it's either he's taking the shot, or if it's not open and he has a lane to the rim, he's going. And I would actually argue that he's been like probably the best at rim finisher, even if, you know, Domas by percentage would have it. But like, other than TJ Warren on the team, like the guy who's a wing that I'm most, you know, thrilled about getting to the rim is probably Doug McDermott. I mean, he's really damn good at it. He's gotten awesome at just handling and getting there. And he's had some finishes this year that are like, okay, all right, Doug, I see you. And I've been really, really positive of him. I think a lot of people get caught up with the defense too. He's not a good defender, just to be completely honest. Like he doesn't have the athleticism or the length to be a great defender. Or even a good defender, but he's really worked hard on his positioning. He's actually pretty good at rotating as the low man and contesting at the rim, even though he's not like a great vertical athlete or anything. But he just competes his ass off on that. And that matters for something. I still kind of wonder what it's going to look like in the playoffs, because he struggled in the playoffs last year and against Boston as well. But in terms of what he does for the bench unit and getting things going from three, like he's been the most consistent, like just kind of safety valve for the team for 2 years now. And it's only improved this year as he's gotten more ability in the drive game. So I think what I'm most interested to see though is what happens in the off season, because he's an unrestricted free agent. He was the only guy I really thought had an opportunity to get traded other than Aaron Holiday. It became apparent, you know, as the day came that he wasn't going to get traded, because they put him in media availability the day of. And I was like, okay, so he's not going. But I just have no idea what kind of deal he's going to command in the summer, because I think he's going to end up getting above the MLE. So I don't know how the Pacers are going to be able to re-sign him. Anything's possible, but it's going to be guys who can shoot and do other things too. Like him adding the ability to finish at the rim is great for the Pacers now. But I'm interested to see how much he gets in the offseason.
All right, guys, that does it for the snippet of the conversation. If you want to hear the full conversation, you can go over to Indy Cornrows We get into a little bit more Hornets talk there, and I asked him one more question about the Pacers, but Hornets are looking to erase the bad showing last night against the Nets and looking to get two games above 500 again, and again, trying to solidify that spot in the fourth overall spot. I'm not sure if they'll end up there by the end of the season, but I'm feeling more and more confident that they're going to finish in the top six. So I don't know if that's going out on a limb by any means, but the East has been weird this year, especially in that 5-9 range. And any team can make a run towards the end of the season and the standings would change in a heartbeat. So thanks again for tuning in to another Buzz Beat. As always, we'd appreciate a rating and review on Apple Podcast. I would love to read another review to open the podcast. Your kind words are always greatly appreciated, and we will see you guys next time.